Here's what's ahead of us on The Balanced Word.
What Jesus is basically saying is, you want to be my disciple? You need to be really loving. And you need to find joy. And you need to make friends. And you need to be loving. When you're loving, you'll find joy. When you're loving, you'll make friends. When you have friends, it makes you have more love. When you have more love and friends, it gives you more joy. It's this constant thing. And you look at it and go, who in the world wouldn't want that?
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Those of you who grew up on a farm as I did are no doubt familiar with harvest time, when you can enjoy the fruit of your labor. After all the pruning, thinning, watering, and fertilizing, you should end up with something to show for it, right? If the tree didn't produce some good fruit, you'd start to think something is wrong. Similarly, the Christian is to bear spiritual fruit. And when there is little or none, there is great cause for concern. Pastor Dave Rolfe takes us to John chapter 15, where we learn about spiritual fruit from the true vine himself. So join us for today's message on The Balanced Word, and we'll get started.
This morning we are looking at John chapter 15. So if you have a Bible, you can flip over to John chapter 15. We're going through the whole Gospel of John, and today we've come to the 15th chapter. I was looking forward to it. It's one of my favorite chapters. It's really an iconic chapter where Jesus talks about I am the vine and you're the branches. And it's Jesus in the last week of his earthly life, preparing the disciples for what they would be facing and how to do life. So all of, you know, John 14, 15, 16, it's all so valuable. But John 15, I've taught on this passage, I think, several times. But this week as I was studying, I think I really got some unique insights and some things that I'm like, whoa, yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, if you go back and listen to my other sermons on John 15, it's quite possible that I actually had these insights before as well, and I just forgot about it. Great thing about getting older is you can continue to be amazed by the same stuff over and over. But for me, it felt like, wow, I hadn't really seen it that way. I hadn't really thought of it that way before. So this is, well, let's just dive right into John chapter 15, and let's look at the first eight verses or so to start off. Jesus said, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes it away. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes it, that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. For without me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is cast out as a branch and is withered, and they gather them and throw them into the fire, and they are burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, you will ask what you desire, and it shall be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit. So you will be my disciples. Jesus is here kind of outlining, as I'm leaving, here's what you need to know and what you need to do to truly follow me, to be my disciple. And he uses this metaphor of a grapevine. I don't know if you've been around grapevines very much, but they're really fascinating things. They can grow like crazy. But if you don't eliminate some of the branches, then they just become a bunch of branches. They don't bear a lot of fruit. You have to cut them back in order to get a lot of good grapes. My grandpa years ago had grapevines, and it was just so interesting that when they looked the best wasn't when they were the most fruitful. But when you cut them back, great fruit came about. And so Jesus is using this metaphor and saying, okay, look, I'm the vine, you're the branches. My Father is the vine dresser. My Father is working in your life so that you can bear, you know, he says, so you can bear fruit, so you can bear more fruit, and so you can bear much fruit. And so that's the basic story of what's going on here. You're pruning for a purpose, greater fruitfulness, fruit, more fruit, much fruit. You have that verse about, you know, oh, well, a branch that gets cut off isn't good for anything. You toss it away and throw it in the fire. That's kind of, that sounds pretty severe. We'll come back to that in a bit. But the key exhortation of this whole thing is I need to abide in Jesus. I need to stick with him. As verse 3 says, look, if you've put your faith in me, you're clean. But you need to stay there. You need to stay connected to me. You don't move beyond me. You stay with me. And he's using the vine and branches to remind his disciples, stick with me. Stick with what I've taught you. Stick with what you know. And again, this powerful, you know, in verse 5 where he says, he who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. What a great reminder from Jesus. Listen, if you want to go out on your own, you can't do a thing without me. One time when I was on the radio with Pastor Chuck, somebody called in and said, I want to know what your life verses are. Life verses are kind of a goofy thing, but that somebody invented. So I gave my standard answer. My life verse is 1 Chronicles 26:18, which in the King James says, at the Parbar westward, four at the causeway, and two at Parbar. Pastor Chuck kind of rolled his eyes. I once had that printed up on pins and gave it out. But Chuck rolls his eyes and he goes, yeah, I don't really have a life verse. But he said, I guess in some ways it might be two verses. Philippians 4:13, which says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and combine that with John 15:5, without me you can do nothing. That's the best answer I've ever heard for, okay, if you want a life verse, how about take two of these? With me you can do anything. Without me you can do nothing. And so Jesus kind of lays this out here and says, stick with me. Now as we look at just those verses, some questions come to mind. First of all, Jesus said, I am the true vine. So what's the false vine? We'll talk about that later, but he's emphasizing that he's the true one. This whole verse about being thrown in the fire, kind of serious, so we'll look at that. But the main fundamental question that we have to ask is, so he's saying, abide in me, abide in me, abide in me, you'll be fruitful. The Father will be working in your life. So what does it mean to abide in Jesus? Does it mean to continue to be a Christian or keep believing everything that you need to believe? But Jesus now goes on to explain to them, beginning with verse 9 and on through verse 17. He says, here's what it is to abide in me. So here's what you really need to know. And so we'll pick up, you know, in verse 9. And he says, as the Father loved me, I also have loved you. Abide in my love. So he goes, you know, to abide in me is to abide in my love. And then he said, if you keep my commandments, you'll abide in my love. So abiding in me is abiding in my love. Keeping my commandments is abiding in my love. Just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things, now it sounds kind of, we have to do everything he says in order to abide in his love and therefore to abide. Man, that sounds like a lot of work. But he says, these things I've spoken to you that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full. So it's not only love and his commandments, it's also joy. Abiding in that makes us abide in him. But now he helps us a little in verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. So he says, to abide in me means to stay in my love. It means to obey the one commandment that I give you that summarizes every commandment that was ever made. Love people the way I love you. That's what Jesus said earlier, is that's his new commandment that he gives. So he says, basically, you want to abide in me, you make sure that you are loving. you find your joy in me. And, oh, by the way, make sure that you are loving. And then he goes on and says, you lay down your life for your friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. So he says, make sure that you love, find your joy, make sure that you love, be a friend. And then he says, I don't call you servants, for a servant doesn't know what his master is doing, but I've called you friends, for all things that I heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you. And by the way, he's not talking about the choice that is before the foundation of the world when he elected you to be a believer. He's talking to disciples that he picked. He goes, I picked you guys, including Judas, by the way. I chose you. You didn't choose me. Here's what I'm telling you is what your life is supposed to look like. I chose you that you would go bear fruit and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, that you love one another. So there's this big circle where he says, you need to abide. You need to stay connected to me. You abiding in me, me abiding in you, we need to have our identities melded together. Your future is based on a relationship that you have in me. What does that look like? You're loving. What does that look like? You're having joy. What does that look like? You're loving. What does that look like? You're becoming a friend. What is a friend? It's loving. It's like he's this broken record. Now, it's probably partly where Paul got his ideas. And when he talks about the fruit of the Spirit, what the Spirit does in our lives, the fruit of the Spirit, Paul said, is love and then joy and peace. And he goes on with the list. So Jesus is here saying the fruit that the Father wants you to bear, the way that you stay connected to me is by love and joy and friendship and love. This is, I can't emphasize this to you enough, Jesus says, as he lays it out there. To when the Father is working in our lives, by the way, we go from having fruit, which is love, to having more fruit, which is like love and joy, to having much fruit, which is like love, joy, friendship, love. And he goes, that's what I'm doing in your life. Stick with me. Now, when you put it that way, you look at it and go, so, what Jesus is basically saying is, you want to be my disciple? You need to be really loving. And you need to find joy. And you need to make friends. And you need to be loving. When you're loving, you'll find joy. When you're loving, you'll make friends. When you have friends, it makes you have more love. When you have more love and friends, it gives you more joy. It's this constant thing. And you look at it and go, who in the world wouldn't want that? When Jesus comes along and says, this is what it means to follow me, who would look at their life and go, you know what, if there's one thing I have too much of, it's joy and love and friends. Too many friends, too much love, too much joy. Who wouldn't want that? Well, that's where then Jesus picks up in verse 18, and he goes, actually, there are some who don't want this. There are some who reject this. And he calls them the world. The world will hate you because the world hates me. That word for world is the Greek word cosmos. Cosmos is a word that at its root, it means to organize or arrange something. He's basically, you know, don't just, and usually when I've looked at this, I've always just thought, oh, the world, it's those non-Christians out there. It's the, you know, the Illuminati or whatever. But, you know, no, it's the system. Whatever the system means to you, whatever the company, the association, it's this broad picture that he's laying out. They hate you. Now, let's go ahead and see what he says about this, beginning with verse 18. If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world, verse 19, the world would love its own, but because you're not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they'll also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. But all these things they will do to you for my name's sake, because they don't know him who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would have no sin, but now they have no excuse for their sin. I made it clear to them. He who hates me hates my Father also. And down in verse 25, this happened that the word might be fulfilled, which is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. And then he wraps up and says, the Holy Spirit's going to come and he's going to help you with all of this. Who is this world that hates me just because it hates Jesus? Let's think about Jesus. As he is defining the cosmos, the system, do you think he's talking about the Roman government? I don't think so. The Roman government didn't hate Jesus so much. I mean, yeah, they ended up cooperating with killing him, but it was only to try to keep the peace. The Romans weren't threatened by him at this point. Who was it that hated Jesus with a passion? It was the Jewish religious system. And in case you're not so sure about that, notice in verse 25, he's talking about the ones who hated him, and he says, but this happened that the word might be fulfilled, which is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. He said the irony that in their law, that is, and this is several, appears several places in the Psalms, they hated me without a cause. He goes, the system hated me, and their law says, oh, they hated me without a cause, and they're hating me without a cause. Now, back up to verse 1, when Jesus said, I am the true vine. Remember I said, well, then what's the false vine? Well, Israel, one of their great symbols was the vine. It would represent their system. In fact, on the temple that was there when Jesus was there, that Herod the Great built to try to kiss up to the Jews, he had an elaborately carved vine around the doors, the entrance to the temple. And he did this as to tip his hat to the Jews, to curry favor with them. And perhaps at this point, Jesus is actually talking to them and pointing at it and saying, I'm not the false vine, the cosmological system of Judaism. I am the true vine. By the way, all of Jesus' I am statements, which are throughout the Gospel of John, whenever he says, now a couple of times he just goes, if you don't believe that I am, you'll die in your sins. Now, I am is kind of a connecting verb or a verb of being. And usually when you say I am or you are or he is, you're completing that verb, that predicate thought by either an adjective or a noun that would be like I am hungry or I am Dave or whatever. But in the Greek, usually when you complete it, it doesn't have a definite article with the predicate, noun, or adjective that follows. In other words, instead of saying, you know, I am the vine, they would, in Greek, it would just be, I am a vine. But so normally with a connecting verb and with a predicate, no, I'm losing you, never mind. The point is, when you read I am the vine, or I am the light of the world, or I am the door to the sheep, I am the good shepherd, you should emphasize the. Because in every one of these cases, the grammatical construction inserts a the where it ordinarily wouldn't be there unless you're saying, no, I am this and they're not. Other people aren't. So he's saying it's the system. Now, maybe that makes you uncomfortable. It kind of did as I was thinking about it, but it totally makes sense. The only ones that were really hating Jesus were the Jewish religious system, at least at first. It's organized religion that posed a threat to him because he posed a threat to them. Now, later on, as history continues to unfold, the Roman and their religious system became more intent to kill Christianity after, you know, 150 years or so. They became the ones. Obviously, later, everything from you know, Muslims to other religious systems that were like, your religion is a threat to my religion, so I'm going to get rid of this. But you kind of go, how come a religious system will be so threatened by somebody else. Why would Jesus be such a threat to them? He wasn't bad-mouthing them. He wasn't saying, don't follow them, follow me. He's teaching at the temple. He's going to synagogue and reading the scrolls. He's saying that the law is good. But the nature of human systems, the nature of any cosmos, any organized, structured thing, the nature of it is evolutionary. Okay, is growth. It's motivated by, I have this, and now what can I add to it? And the more we add to something that's simple, the more we dilute it. Things don't become better as they develop, as they become more involved. You know, in physics, they talk about the second law of thermodynamics, or the law of entropy. What that means is, when things are left to themselves, they tend to devolve. They tend to develop in a way that lowers the quality, the entropy as organization. So it's like things become less organized and more of a mess the more you let them go. That's been the history of the world ever since the Garden of Eden. You know, it starts out, you have two people who are in love. There's nobody else they're even lusting after or looking at, because it's like, whoa, two people who are perfect. And they live in a perfect environment, in a garden. And they can eat of all the trees except just one. In fact, the only rule they have is don't eat of that one tree. You can do anything else that you want to do. And then God shows up and you know, hangs out with you. And, I mean, no weeds or anything like that. It's like, wow, what an environment. Ever since then, and because of sin, the earth has been devolving ever since. The greater the system, whether it's the Tower of Babel or whether it's other civilization-type organizations and everything, it all moves us in a direction away from the ideal. But that's why we spend our lives working hard to get a bunch of stuff and then hope we can get a couple of weeks to go stay in a garden and go, oh yeah, I live for this. When life started, it was all a vacation. That was the way it was. That's why vacations kind of feel like, whoa, it's good to get out into beauty, but got to get back to work, got to do this, got to do that. So any system is threatened by simplicity. The nature of true Christianity, as Jesus presents it, is simplicity. He's just, you know, the Jews had like hundreds and hundreds of laws. Jesus is like, you know what? Let me give you the Cliff Notes. Just love God and love each other. You'll be fine.
You're listening to The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe. As we go through the Gospel of John together, there may come a time when you'd like to hear a message again. You can do so rather easily at thebalancedword.com or call and request a CD copy at 949-362-7475. By the way, we're making this complete series in John available to you on a thumb drive for a donation of $10 or more. Go through this powerful gospel from start to finish with Pastor Dave. Again, call 949-362-7475 and we can help you with that. Please remember, it's your support that allows us to bring the teaching of God's Word to the radio every day. Thank you for standing with us. Again, we can be reached at 949-362-7475. Or you can make a donation and resource request online at thebalancedword.com. We'd like to invite you to visit us at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Pastor Dave Rolfe teaches most weekends, and you can hear him teach the Word Sunday morning at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. He always enjoys meeting his listeners, so please say hi after the service. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com. Or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Bringing things down to a personal level, here again is Pastor Dave Rolfe.
Let's just make it personal here. If you've accepted Jesus Christ, he says there in verse 3, you're clean. He cleaned you, he forgave you, he gave you a fresh start the moment you received Jesus. But let's get personal. What's been growing in your life since then? What is it that has become extra branches and extra stuff? What have you taken on that when at one point, maybe life just seemed simple. I just want to love Jesus and love other people. And I want to find friends who want to do the same. I just really want to find joy. Well, what is being added to your life? See, and really, let me just put it this way. What is it in your life and in mine that will burn someday, and yet you've invested in it? That someday it's not going to matter at all, and yet it is driving a huge part of your life.
We'll save the rest of this message for next time. The Balanced Word is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo and online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up, my hands. And